Hello, listeners. Jalmaro here. Just wanted to give you a heads up that this was a longer discussion than usual, as we had a broader and more in-depth conversation with three special guests. So since it's a long one, we wanted to give you timestamps of when we discussed certain topics so that you can jump to a certain topic of interest if you'd like. You can go to the 8-minute mark to learn more about the Eritrean resistance movement. At 17:30, we discuss the concept of independence without freedom in Eritrea and what we as Oromos can learn from that. At 29:45, we hear about what allows support for Isaias and his regime to continue. At 53:30, we ask about how the deployment of troops into Ethiopia has affected average Eritrean citizens. At around 1 hour and 15 minutes, we ask about what Eritreans think of the Oromo struggle. And lastly, at about 1:28:30, we inquire about what is next for Eritrea. You can also mix it up by watching the video version. That's right. We actually also aired this discussion live in video form on Kalo Media. So you can get the link to that in our show notes at freeoromia.org/podcast. Without further ado, let's get into the episode.
You're listening to the Free Oromia podcast, dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. Thanks for tuning in to the Free Oromia podcast. Visit our website at freeoromia.org. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Team Free Oromia, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Team Free Oromia. You can also give us a call on the Free Oromia podcast hotline at 430-755-0727 and leave us a voicemail asking us questions or giving us your feedback. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. We are Team Free Oromia, and you are listening to the Free Oromia podcast, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom, liberation, and decolonization. I'm Jalmaro, and I'm joined, as usual, by my brilliant co-host, Jal Ango.
Hello. Hi. How are you, Jalmaro?
I'm good. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you.
So today we are not only an audio podcast, but we're actually hosting a live video discussion as well. Thank you so much to Kalo Media for hosting this segment and for always creating a platform for important conversations like this. Listeners and viewers, if this is your first time tuning in, we're so happy to have you joining us today. And if you're a returning listener, we're thrilled to have you back again. Take a moment to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Team Free Oromia, and also visit our website, www.freeoromia.org, for more. I am very excited to introduce our guests for this discussion today. We are fortunate enough to be joined by three new Eritrean friends, Salem, Await, and Fikre. Would you be so kind as to briefly introduce yourselves to our audience?
All right. Hi, guys. My name is Salem Haila, and I am Eritrean. I have recently I've become a spokeswoman for a group called Team Freedom. And so we kind of try to mobilize youth, and we work very closely with Yakal as well. But mainly my goal is to be a humanitarian, just to help anybody around the world that needs a voice. I think it's very important to use your privilege to help people who are oppressed. So that's been my goal. And I started speaking on social media about it. And that's how I guess I got the attention of my sisters here. So thank you guys so much for having me today. And I look forward to this conversation. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, me too. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead next. Hi, Mero too, Ango too, as well as my peers, Farah and Salam. My name is Awat Sahaye. I'm also from Eritrea, born and raised in Eritrea. back into the United States at a very young age, actually before Eritrea's independence. I'm a husband and I'm a father of three boys. In addition to that, I'm with the Baito Yakel USA. I'm one of the executives. In addition to that, I also help with the Ira Yakel Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization devoted to helping Eritrean refugees from Ethiopia to Egypt to Sudan to Libya, you name it. And definitely, thank you so much for having us, and I'm looking forward to obviously our conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Awit.
All right, I'm next. My name is Fikre Gaim. I live in Louisville, Kentucky. I am an activist, a human rights advocate, and a member of the Yakel movement. I'll be part of the General Assembly of the Yakel movement and the executive team of the Yakel movement since its inception in 2019. And I'm also a member of the executive team as a vice chair. And I'm looking forward to a great discussion here. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you all here.
Absolutely.
Yes. So just to introduce a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today, many Oromos know Eritrea as a country that gained independence from Ethiopia in 1991 after a hard-fought freedom struggle. Oromos who are highly invested in our own people's struggle for liberation and freedom have often felt that our Eritrean friends are one of the few peoples that can actually understand things like our lack of connection with the Ethiopian identity, for example, in addition to the quest for liberation and what that means to us. Meanwhile, many of us also know that conditions in Eritrea have become increasingly repressive over the years and decades. And as some would say, and some have said, Eritrea has independence without freedom. We all watched the Escaping Eritrea documentary, which aired in May 2021 on Frontline. And we were devastated to learn more about what Eritrean people are facing under Isaias's authoritarian rule. And additionally, in light of recent events regarding the horrific crimes against humanity and war crimes being perpetrated by Ethiopia's current regime against civilians, as well as the involvement of Eritrea's regime, a lot of discussion has been sparked. And I think a lot of people's eyes have been opened into some of the wider politics in the region. So bearing all this in mind, we wanted to have all of you on today to have this discussion with us so that, you know, we can learn more from each other and hopefully to foster some more collaboration moving forward. First, can you tell us more about Yakel and also more broadly about the anti-Isaias, anti-regime resistance movement in Eritrea? And then as a follow-up to that, if you could speak to the experience of Eritrean activism in the diaspora, especially given that there is, from our understanding, a really large divide in the communities with those who are pro-PFDJ actively contradicting the work that you're doing.
First and foremost, I guess, let me go ahead and get back to what Baito Yakel USA is, what its objectives and missions are, and then, of course, I'll get some help from my brother, Fagre, and as well as Salem. So Baito Yakel USA, so when we say Baito, what does it mean? Baito means in one of our native language, Tigrinya, assembly, and Yakel means also in Tigrinya, enough. So what are we saying Yakel to? Basically to the injustice that continues to be imposed to our people. So Baito Yakel USA in itself was started in 2019. And of course, we saw the process where it was going when, you know, Abiy Ahmed came to power. And of course, by partnering with Isaias Afwerki, I mean, we could all go ahead and talk about the war started in 2020. But I think most Eritreans knew right away that anybody that befriends Isaias Afwerki is headed into disaster. So obviously we notice that now. So Baito Yakel USA, obviously we went to a mode of mobilizing our people For example, here in the United States, we exist in 40 different cities, actually 42, I'm sorry, different cities that we have a member on. And our goal is to continue to strive to bring to Eritrea peace, justice, and democracy. Not only in the United States, but obviously we also have active other countries, to be exact, 10 countries. And believe it or not, actually, in a couple of days, we can have our first upcoming Congress on the 31st of July, as well as on the 1st of August. And if you don't mind, I would like to go ahead and mention those 10 countries. It is Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, Italy, South Africa, Sweden, Switzerland, United States, and of course, United Kingdom. So this is who Baita Yakal ESA is.
Yeah, just let me just add a few things on that. So it's basically a grassroots movement, bottom-up movement. You have mentioned a lot of good points when you have introduced already the topic why we are here. The Eritreans have been saying enough. Basically, the word the Yakal means, as I have mentioned, enough to misery, enough to serve the slavery of the youths, enough to imprisonment, enough to the country having no constitution, having a brutal dictatorship in the country, and our youths really risking their lives through the Sahara and Mediterranean seas. So many horrible things happening to our people. The word enough, and Eritreans have not just said enough in 2018 or 2019, they have been saying enough. Initially in the 40s, maybe for colonization, again through the armed struggle. And then now recently, after the Eritrea got liberated from the Ethiopian colonization, we also have been saying enough to the current government's dictatorship. And in 2018, 2019, as I've mentioned, the Yakal movement mobilized most Eritreans in all over the world. But the countries that you mentioned are the ones that have already organized assemblies, general assemblies, or vitals. Parliament, you can say a parliament. It's native to our language and culture that societies in our country, especially at the village level, chose their own leaders, and that's how they have been. They have a very sophisticated, mature political maturity, even though it seems backward society, but it has a very mature political maturity in a way that they were able to democratically elect their own leaders. But then the current government and colonizations before the government have tried to dismantle the very fabric of our population, our society, our traditions, our way of governing ourselves. And now we're trying to bring that back, have a grassroots movement and ensure that the people are choosing their own leaders, that people dictate what happens to them, not necessarily the leaders dictating on them. So it's a broad Eritrean movement that have been happening all over the world, but the 10 countries are the ones that are organizing to become a globally active vital, which is the parliament or assembly.
Great.
So I just met one of the head of Yakal, I believe, Elan, and I love her. We share a lot of conversations. And so she has been helping me and Dawi, Captain Eritrea, work in trying to figure out how we can get our voices amplified, all of us. Like, I guess kind of like what we have an issue with is not only that we have opposition, it's that our opposition is kind of divided. So we're working on trying to get that together. So I really love how Yakal has been able to be kind of an umbrella to bring everyone together. From what I heard, there was a meeting a couple of years ago, and they got like 18 of the opposition groups to be part of Yakal or something like that. And it's just beautiful because it's been a way for everyone to mobilize, because it kind of seemed like we didn't have the unity that we needed in order to actually make any kind of change. So I'm not part of Yakal, but I do fully support it, and I plan to like get to know more about what they have going on. And in terms of what you were saying about, like, you notice the divide with pro PFDJ people constantly contradicting the work that we're doing. Yeah, it's pretty much been gaslighting. Everything we say that happens, they say isn't true. And then when the moment we stop talking about it, they say, oh my God, it's true. Like, for example, we've been talking about refugees. Yakala has been helping refugees for years. They have been helping people in Sudan. They've been helping people all over. And all of a sudden, now there are issues with refugees that it's been in Tigray specifically. And all of a sudden, pro-government people want to speak about those refugees. And I'm like, I love that you want to speak about our refugees. But where were you this whole time? You know, and if you want to help refugees, let's help all of them, because we have links to help you for the ones in Libya. We have the ones in Sudan. We have so many. So it's just been, I don't know if that was your specific question, but from my experience, it's been very difficult, and it doesn't get much easier because you're just constantly being called a liar, a traitor, you know, you're being called. But it just depends on who you're talking to, because, you know, my specific story, I was pro-government growing up. So who I am today is exactly who I despised growing up. So it's pretty much like a part of it is very hard for me because I do understand where they're coming from. There's a huge brainwashing component. There's psychological warfare on these children. You know, we were kids raised to think that one man is responsible for our whole existence. Meanwhile, we had actual martyrs, people who paid their life for this prize, and we're celebrating the man who survived. Like, you know, but as you get older and you start to question these things, you lose a lot of friends, you lose family, you get questioned, it's kind of, you realize people are turning our nationality into more of a fraternity or a gang rather than an ethnicity or a nationality or, you know, a tribe. Like, this is something that's in your bloodline. You can't just take it away from me because I disagree with you. So basically, PFDJ has fostered a very dangerous environment where we're not allowed to have any other opinions. And it's been very hard for all of us to work together. So again, I want to thank Yaku, because this getting, like, the global Yaku and the Baitul Yaku of USA coming together is beautiful. Like, we have not been able to do that before. That's really monumental.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing information about Yakal and, you know, the movement that has been happening amongst the people of Eritrea for a very long time, you know, to try and free the Eritrean people from the dictatorship that that you and they are under. Jalmaro mentioned earlier about this sentiment that people have expressed about Eritrea having independence without having freedom. And you've all described some of the horrible conditions that the people of Eritrea have to endure because of the state, because of state violence, because of state oppression. You know, including things such as political imprisonment on a mass scale, no free press or free media, and indefinite conscription, which I believe the UN has actually recognized as a form of enslavement. So considering these conditions and what you have also described about the difficulties of being a citizen of Eritrea, would you agree with that sentiment that Eritrea has independence without having freedom? What are your reflections on that?
Now, my point of view on that is obviously, as we went through the colonization of, you know, whether it's by the British or Italians or Ethiopians, so on and so forth, our people endured so much. And then, of course, after we paid a heavy price for our independence, obviously by our own sons and daughters, to see what we're going through right now is it really is heartbreaking. Okay, we got our independence, but you stated it right. We never gotten our freedom. In fact, it gotten worse. Like my sister Salam was saying earlier, there were statistics from the United Nations that came out before the war started and what have you, obviously in Ethiopia. Anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 youth were obviously fleeing Eritrea. And for a small population, for a country like Eritrea, that is huge. I mean, just think about it. 3,000 to 5,000 youth every month fleeing for their life out of the country. And just imagine the dangers that's obviously that awaits them as they continue to escape such So Eritrea, unfortunately, under the dictatorship of Isaias Afwerki, we have seen a lot. We have endured a lot. And that's the reason why, obviously, we have Baitayakal globally coming together to find justice and then democracy and then, of course, rule of law for our people.
Yeah. So I think Eritrea had fought a huge war against the Ethiopians for 30 years. But before that, our people have been trying to get freedom from different colonizers, as Art mentioned. So the fact that we have gotten together a very small population of maybe about 2.3 million at that time against over 60 million Ethiopians in the Soviet Union, the first in the United States during the Haile Selassie region, and then after the Derg region took over the Soviet, the full power force of the Soviet or the East Bloc, including soldiers coming from countries like Cuba or even military advisors coming from Russia, East Germany, and things like that. The Eritrean people have fought a very hard battle, a hard war against the Ethiopian colonization. And the fact that we have fought together created so much trust among each other, which that trust and the bond was broken by the current leader. So one of the things that Salim was mentioning earlier was how divided the society is. And that's one of the results. We've had a hard struggle against colonizers, against outsiders. But then it became difficult when we have internal dictatorship. It became difficult to actually identify who the enemy is, because the enemy could be your uncle, it could be your aunt, it could be your neighbor, or even your father, who is in power working with the government. So it has made it very difficult, and there is a lot of trust issues. But I can guarantee one thing: it doesn't matter whether you're opposition or dictatorship. Everyone wants change right now. Everybody wants change. The only thing that we may decide the change should come, or maybe some of the government supporters at this point are not honest about how they feel about the situation on the ground. Because when you talk to them in private, they will tell you that change is needed. When you talk to them in public, when there is a public event there, you see them supporting the government, which is really a problem here. Because that the problem that we have in the country, nobody's benefiting from it. Even the people that are supporting the government don't have any benefit from it, really. In fact, their family members, their relatives are being either detained or fleeing the country. They are even contributing to help their family members flee the country, so that they're directly impacted by the situation. And yet they still support the government, because there is that nostalgia about the past, about the fight that we had against colonization, and hanging on to it at any cost, even if it means losing our even the very sovereignty or independence that we cherish so much. But one thing, again, that I want to stress really hard is any Eritrean at this point sees the problem is really the way we are react to it, or the way we want publicly acknowledge it. That's the difference. And Baitayakal is not necessarily only dealing with the people that are in the opposition camp, because we believe this is a national problem, a national crisis, and it needs a national solution. And anybody that wants change in the country is welcome to contribute, so that we can see change, remove the dictatorship, and see the country that we have fought so hard and paid so dearly of thousands and thousands of lives. So really, this is a lesson for us. This is the first time that we've governed ourselves. It has been from colonization to colonization. The only difference is that some of them were colonial powers from Europe, others were colonial powers from our southern neighbors. But this is the only chance we got to lead, to govern ourselves. We did not have any example. And unfortunately, the example that we are setting right now has been a disaster for the last 30 years. And this is a huge lesson for Eritreans and anybody that's fighting for liberation or independence in the future as well. The things that we are facing could be a lesson also for the Oromia people. And I think maybe if there's other points, Salim can help us as well.
I love what Fulana just said. He basically hit it on the nail by saying that we can't identify our oppressors this time because it could be our uncles. And it's usually one thing I've learned is, like, for example, here, I've learned that righteousness is something that you're allowed only because of your circumstances. No one in my country seems to have the ability to choose between right and wrong anymore because it's all about survival. And so with that being the new circumstances, this man has created monsters of people. Not saying about our people, but just people who don't carry the same values that the Eritrean people did, which is what we're celebrating to this day. The people who hold on to that idea, it's the idea of we fought hand in hand, women and men, children, adults, everybody fought because we had morale and we wanted this. But now everyone's lost their ability to dream. So it's a different type of helplessness that I've seen. I mean, it's very hard to say, is it better to be colonized by your own or by someone else? Because they really both are not good. And so the thing about us not having freedom but having independence is, it's ironic because when I'm learning about how this man got into the power that he has, Isaias, it's because he was basically telling us, you don't want Derg, you know, the Derg is the worst. They use children and they conscript them into military camp. They don't allow you to have your own thoughts. They arrest people and they have spies and family members so that friends and family can't even trust each other. That's how he sold us the dream of him being our president. And ironically, he took that same blueprint. Not one thing has changed. He named it different. He named it, ironically, the People's Front for Democracy and Justice. And there's no democracy, no justice, just the front. Like, none of it makes any sense. So, you know, Independence Day every year, I celebrate it. It's the best. I light candles. You know, it's not a day to celebrate, actually. It's not a day to dance, but it's a day I light candles. And I remember our martyrs, and I still respect them to this day. But to see what's happened, especially in this last year, to see how our people have divided and in the ways they've divided, specifically between, you know, like wanting to go back to being with the country that oppressed us for so long. And, you know, just everything being questioned, our identity being questioned, our morals being questioned. It's just, I don't want to sound like I'm not grateful for the independence, but it's been very hard to celebrate it when we don't have freedom and my people are starving, you know? So I don't mean to make you guys depressed, but I just didn't know you could have one without the other, but Eritrea is a perfect example.
It is a mind-boggling concept, honestly. And everything that you were saying, all of you and Salem, what you were just saying right now, I mean, I feel like such a textbook, you know, dictatorship playbook. It's like straight out of Animal Farm, extremely Orwellian. And it's really sad because, you know, as you all have said, and, you know, from an outsider perspective, you know, seeing the Eritrean struggle for liberation, you know, come to fruition, and then kind of what has happened after that, it's very heartbreaking. And as a people who are, you know, supporting our people's movement for liberation as well, it really gives you pause, I think. So mm-hmm. Yeah,
it certainly does. And it's really interesting to hear you describe some of the conditions that have allowed this situation in Eritrea to arise. And, you know, Fikre, you spoke about other liberation movements being able to take lessons from Eritrea's independence story and from what's happened in Eritrea since you gained your independence. And, you know, Salem, you spoke about the people of Eritrea simply thinking about survival at this stage, That they are so intent on simply surviving that anything else becomes, you know, unthinkable or unattainable or beyond the scope of what can be brought into their immediate reality or, you know, immediate day-to-day life. So it kind of brings up the question of, because you mentioned, I believe, Fikre, about the nostalgia that Eritrean people have for the independence struggle and holding on to that nostalgia to continue justifying what is happening today and to continue justifying ISIS's dictatorial rule. But what are some of the other things that allow support for ISIS to overrule or to sort of trump people's lived experiences? Because from what you've explained, the majority of Eritrean people are living in dire conditions. And so their lived experiences, whether they support ISIS or not, are essentially the same. So what is it that allows this support for ISIS? I was about to say IB then, because... they are so similar. You know, it feels hard to distinguish them in my mind. But what is it that causes the Eritrean people to still support ISIS despite their lived experiences every day? And what are some of those lessons that you think other liberation movements can take away to avoid slipping into this sort of authoritarianism once they achieve their independence?
So what we said earlier is Eritrea is independent without freedom. And that's really what Yaakov is fighting for, right? So the fact that we have fought for independence and we have used a united force, a united front, everybody inside the country, abroad, different ethnic groups. Eritrea is made up of 9 ethnic groups. And all these ethnic groups work together to actually get independence. What we have failed to understand or learn is how we struggled for independence and how we got that independence was not necessarily what was going to take us to freedom as well. Because the very people that got us independent, helped us get or led the struggle for independence are the ones that have become, that became the dictators. So mainly the main leader and with alongside a couple of people that helped him suppress his own people. So when we think about a struggle, our struggle, what we fail to understand is post-independence, the people were not questioning because this is the group that got us independence from colonization. So the people could not question the authorities. The people, even when some individuals from the current government, leaders, top leaders, including the vice chair of Minister of Foreign Affairs or other leaders that got arrested in 2001, and nobody knows where they are until now, the people did not question that because they trusted the government, they trusted the front that got the independence in the first place. So one of the main issues we have here is not only that we trusted the government, the government also managed to put an enemy. The war of the 98-2000 with Ethiopia, the border war, also created another reason for people to stick together with the government, at least as a justification. In the first when the war was happening or immediately after, almost everybody, all Eritreans were alongside the government because this was a national sovereignty issue, a border issue that could have made us lose our national sovereignty. This is something that's dear to the Eritrean people. No Eritrean wants to see the national sovereignty of Eritrea be invaded. So everybody got together to defend the country in that border war. How it started, why it started is a different topic. But what we are talking about here is Eritrean people got together to fight for it. So since then, though, that was used as enemy next door, the big enemy that colonized you. And in fact, now it's governed, that country, Ethiopia, is governed by a group that we trained during the 30-year struggle. We trained and we took them to Addis Ababa, and now they are in power and they want to invade us. They want to take your independence away. that's what the narrative have been from the government, and therefore the people want to make sure that that does not happen. So a lot of people have been misled to believe that there is a bigger enemy that's threatening their national independence, the actual independence. Now we got independence fighting for freedom, but the very independence that we fought so hard for was undermined by the border war. And therefore, we have to stick together. And that's at least what the government uses as justification. So that has become a main for fighting or uniting concept for the people that are supporting the government. Some of them, they honestly believe that Eritrea is under threat from the regime, from Ethiopian PRDF. And therefore, we have to stick with our government. But some already understand that that's not the case, and that they chose to stay with the government for different reasons. Some of them could be because they live in diaspora and they have built a house in the country, and they want to make sure that they keep that house, that they want to maintain their summer vacations to the country for selfish reasons. So for individual selfish reasons, some people compromise the national integrity, the national freedom that has been deteriorating over the last 30 years, especially over the last 20 years. So out in Salem could help contribute to answer that question further. But this is really a struggle that we have not had in the past, but this is a struggle that we are learning a lot and making sure that we separate the real enemy from the real enemy to the Eritrean people is the government in the country, not a foreign government. Because the government is the one who is enslaving our youths, imprisoning pretty much anybody that questions his authority, and ruling the country without any people's laws. We had a constitution that should have been implemented in 1997, and the leader, Isaias Afwerki, decided to not implement it. And the National Assembly, or the Baito, it has not met since 2001 or 2002. So pretty much the executive branch led by the president is a judiciary, is a legislative. Nobody questions the authority. Anything that happens in the country is ordered from the president's office. And we've allowed for this in the name of national security. And the people, some of the people that support the government claim that our national security have been undermined, and therefore we have to stick. Democracy or freedom or constitution was luxury to these people, but little that we know that that's also the very thing that is undermining our national sovereignty. When the Eritrean government and Isaias and Abiy started making peace deals, where we don't have any national assembly, nobody knows what they are arguing on, nobody knows what they are signing, and that also again threatened our national sovereignty again, because we honestly, the Eritreans, we have built a mistrust with the Ethiopians, with the Ethiopian elite, not with the Ethiopian people. The Ethiopian people, I think, want peace. I have no doubt about that. No matter what ethnic group they are in Ethiopia, they want peace. They want to be able to raise their kids in peace without no war. They want to send their kids to school. To school. They want to make sure that they feed themselves. There is a lot of hunger every year that comes out report. But then when they started working with Abiy Ahmed, the Eritreans, especially people on the opposition, like the Yaakob movement, thought this is also a national sovereignty issue because we don't know what they are signing. Isaias may be selling the country or some parts of the country access to Ethiopia. And therefore, this is part of the Yaakob movement, is to make sure that we continue, even though we have paid so much for independence. We need to pay something else also, unfortunately, for freedom, so that we have a prosperous nation that lives in peace with its neighbors.
Mm-hmm. That's very insightful. Especially the fact that the Eritrean government, dangles the prospect of war with Ethiopia as some sort of boogeyman to maintain their legitimacy and to maintain their chokehold on power, to protect the Eritrean people from this potential threat to their independence and sovereignty. But then, you know, it's also interesting to see that in supposedly doing so, when the conscription, the indefinite conscription that the Eritrean state enforces on all able or able-bodied citizens of Eritrea, being so detrimental to the people, being so detrimental to the youth, and being so detrimental to development in the country, it's such an interesting paradox that I'm here to protect you, but my form of protecting you is equal to your destruction, or the way that I protect you will bring about your destruction. That's really a rather difficult situation to contend with. But yeah, are there any other thoughts on what else or what may be causing people to choose siding with the government rather than, you know, taking everything that they experience on a day-to-day basis as reason enough to reject the state? Of course, as you've mentioned, Fikre, as well, there's fear of retribution, because of standing up against the state. But yeah, are there, you know, any other reasons as well that might be causing this to happen? And also, you know, what lessons do you feel that we can take away from Eritrea's struggle? Salem and Awet, if you want to chime in on any of that.
I do, yeah. So obviously there are a lot of people that don't want to speak because they have their own assets and properties and want to be able to go in and out of the country. I was one of those people for a long time, but mainly for me, it was, I thought that if I said anything, my family back home was going to get imprisoned and killed. Like, that's what they made us believe. But then ironically, these were like pro-government people who were like, we have democracy, but if you say anything on Instagram, your family will be killed. Like, it just didn't make any sense how both can exist at the same time. That's obviously one thing. However, I like to say this a lot. I think it's cognitive dissonance. I think it's honestly people not wanting to give up that they, okay, first of all, like our parents, a lot of our parents were raised during war. Like their childhood was during war. They had no, you know, there was nothing other than that. Obviously, it wasn't every day being bombed, but just the idea that to this day, when they hear a loud noise, it could take them back to their childhood, which was bombings. I can't really relate to that. So when they remember their childhoods and they remember how much they've already sacrificed in the first quarter of their life, they refuse to give that up. All the friends they made, all of the celebrations, all of the highs and the lows, going through it with the people they know. I don't know too, I mean, luckily for me, I was pro-government and I'm not anymore, and I lost so many friends. But luckily, I like to think I'm young enough and more and like emotionally strong enough to be able to know that there's more out there in the world. But when you're taught that your whole world is being part of a collective of people, even if it means going against yourself, even if it means not having your own integrity, even if it means not questioning anything around you, that's all that matters to you. It's very hard to leave that. So I say that a lot of it has to do with just, we've become very selfish people. We refuse to lose our friends. We refuse to lose our way of life because it does turn your life upside down. It's a cult. So you're going to have people turn on you, and they're not going to leave you alone. They're going to call you a traitor, and they'll probably they'll tell your wife to leave you. And it gets really deep. Some people go through a lot with this whole thing. So I think I know so many people who message me saying they support me, but would never repost anything I say. So everything is fear-based. I honestly, like what I was saying, everyone wants change. I don't think there's one person who doesn't know how bad it is. But I think it's all fear. So there's that. And then I consider Isaias Afwerki kind of like, to say that there are no other threats to our country that's not realistic. Of course, we're in a prime location. It's a beautiful place for the West. Like, of course, we could be threatened all the time. Our sovereignty could be threatened. And, you know, there are some policies that we may need to keep. But he's more to me, I don't think he has any good policy. I think he's been lying this whole time. But just in general, I think that even if we did have a foreign bully, he's to me like an alcoholic father who just lost his job and is mad at his kid for losing his job. So he's beating his kids. Like, how do you think that it's okay to, just because even if it was a boogeyman and it was somebody else who's constantly like threatening us, this is the way you're going to treat us. What's the difference between them hurting us and you, you know? And so it's funny how you put it last. It's he is feeding into our destruction either. And then we're thinking his version of, you know, his is better than, like, someone recently told me this and I thought it was the saddest thing I've ever heard. Someone DM'd me and said they would rather have be near a familiar demon than near a foreign angel or something like that. They'd rather be around what's familiar. And that was so sad to hear, because it was like, really, is that what we've come to? We just think there's no better. Everyone thinks if he's gone, the unknown could be so much worse. When I mean we knew what the people inside were actually going through, it would be hard to tell me that there's any other version of hell. I'm sure that man has found ways to make everyone suffer in ways that have not been seen on this planet, and especially without any awareness being brought to it. He's been able to run this place like it's his own personal house and playground. And so I just don't see, I know things, I'm not going to say that things can't possibly get worse, but it's going to take a lot to prove that to me. Because if we knew what was actually going on a daily basis, I don't think we would have that kind of sentiment or rhetoric.
I think both Salem and Fitray said it very well in details. And unfortunately, what we have in Eritrea with the dictator Isaias Afwerki is an audience of one. I think the region supporters at home or abroad, everything that they say, everything that they do, any overtime that they work is to please an audience of one, which is Isaias Afwerki. So to sum it all, it's fear. And that fear is real, because by you speaking out, your family members literally could cost them their life or be in jail or obviously jammed up into a container, so on and so forth. I think, Angatu, what you said earlier in terms of support for Isaias Afwerki, I honestly don't think that he has any support. What he has is, I think, individuals or groups with benefit. And those individuals, unfortunately, are selfish enough. They're only looking out for themselves, and they're not even looking out for the future of their kids or for their family members, just for themselves. And it is sad. In addition to that, if I could go ahead and kind of track it down while Fahra and Salam were speaking out, I would just, you know, dotting notes, so on and so forth. Just think about it. Eritrea gained its independence in 1993. Eritrea is literally ruled by a ruthless dictator, Isaias Afwerki, for 30 years or plus. People frown for democracy and justice. And what Salam was saying earlier, I mean, they have the guts to go ahead and name themselves, you know, democracy and justice. I mean, those terminologies don't even belong to this regime, to this group. But nevertheless, led by Isaias Afwerki, is the only sole political party in Eritrea. For God's sake, competition is good. But then again, they don't want no competition. The regime continues to commit gross human rights violations for the last 3 years. And I think every institution that looks out for human rights worldwide have Eritrea in their list, and it's unfortunate. In addition to that, there has been no election in Eritrea. But probably the term election itself probably ended up in jail. It's unfortunate. Eritrea is a country that has no independent press. Unfortunate. So there's one radio, one TV, one newspaper, all owned by the regime. Unfortunate. In addition to that, Eritrea has no constitution. And what is so funny to me is, or how hypocrite the regime supporters are. A while back, Dictator Isaias Afwerki did an interview. And in his interview, he stated that when the Ethiopian government at the time under Prime Minister Meles Zenawi, when they were putting the Ethiopian constitution together, one of the things that they did was they came up to him for consultation or advice and so on and so forth. So he said that in detail, by means of highlighting and so on and so forth, he looked at it and he reviewed the constitution and knew that it was not a good working constitution for the people of Ethiopia. Seriously, you didn't have a constitution of your own, but somebody, a foreign country, is coming to you for advice on constitution? Doesn't make sense. In addition to that, as I was listening to Fikre and Salam Haftay, one of the advice that was given to us recently by an individual freedom fighter that we all think of Eritreans highly, he said during the struggle for our independence, one of the things that kind of a common that united us all was the independence of our country, the freedom of our country. And everybody was from higher up to lower down. Everybody was so focused in getting Eritreans independent, they literally kind of shut down what the next step was. Meaning that they had talked about democracy and constitution and elections during the freedom days, he thinks we wouldn't have been in the position that we are in right now. So in terms of struggle, the struggle is obviously a core issue of itself, but we got to be able to go ahead and go a step or two steps farther in order to go ahead and obviously fulfill the objective or the mission. Wow.
Thank you so much. No, sorry, yeah, I was just going to say thank you so much for that.
Yeah, I feel like you all made some really profound statements and some really good insights that I think I'm going to have to think about after this a little bit more. Always, as you just said, you know, that concept of thinking about nation building before independence or during that process of independence, because, you know, when for people who are colonized, you think of independence and you assume that freedom comes with it, they really are separate. And as you know, I think we feel for our own peoples and our own nations that independence can be that pathway to sustainable freedom, but also it doesn't necessarily mean that that's part of it at all. And so, I think that's very important advice. And Salem, like when you said that someone told you they would prefer a familiar demon to a foreign angel, I think it really makes you question. I mean, I think with that, there's two elements to it. You could think about, okay, well, Esaias has been in power for decades now, so maybe that's what makes him familiar, but also the concept of him, you know, being a fellow countryman and being an Eritrean and doing this to his own people. I think when you think of that, you know, side of the familiarity, it's something really tough to come to terms with. And the fact that someone actually, you know, not only recognized that that's how they viewed the situation, but felt, you know, that they had come to terms with that so much that they even mentioned that to you, I think it's just, it's really perplexing. So, you know, bringing things into a present day context a little bit, one thing that we noticed as, you know, Oromo advocates or activists is that Eritreans, specifically Eritreans who are anti-regime, because, you know, definitely the PFDJ camp was actively supporting the war alongside Abiy and Esaias. But, you know, Eritreans were strong allies in the call for Eritrean troops to leave Ethiopia. And so the solidarity of Eritreans with the peoples of Oromia and Tigray was really palpable, I think, especially in the online community. So I want to kind of look at this from a different perspective. You know, obviously we've talked about previously, you know, what types of things have been happening at the hands of Esaias's troops alongside Abiy's troops and the Amhara militias and everything like that. But how did the deployment of Eritrean troops into Oromia, Tigray, and Ethiopia in general affect average Eritrean citizens?
So, you know, for us, refugees are, they're our biggest concern, specifically because, you know, ideally we would like to get the kids to stay in the country, but we know we can't get them to do that, because when you're young, you don't really care. You just want your ability to be free and you think anywhere else is better. So a lot of people run and flee. And we already have a problem with that. We're like, don't go through Libya. Don't risk your life. Go at a different time. Wait, can you just wait a little bit? We get very scared for them because, of course, we understand we wouldn't want to live there either, but it's still terrifying. These are your family members. But right now, this man literally just said, let me waste all your lives to go to war where we won't benefit from either way. We won't benefit regardless. There's no benefit for Eritrean people regardless. So when he did that, it was a slap in the face to us because at that point, I wish I just told everyone, run away, run away. What are you running? What are you fighting for again after just another 20 years? What are we fighting for every 5 minutes? Are we the Trojans? Are we the Spartans? Could we not exist outside of war? Is that what this man is telling us? And it's so, and not only that, understanding like from the inside, my mom, she calls her cousin all the time and her cousin's been scared. She's like, my son is, you know, having panic attacks because he feels like if we send him to the store, he's going to get conscripted, which is a very real thing. Everyone's been getting conscripted. And so they get taken and the next thing they know, they're in the middle of a war ground in Tigray. They're either surrendering or they're dying. So these are children, like on top of that. And then now it's an Oromia. Like, what do we get from this? What empire are we trying to protect here? That's, I think, the most painful is because we know what we're doing. We know who we're helping. And it's the most painful thing because this man made us, the only reason that Isaias had all this power is because he told us, he's like, we're independent, we're sovereign, we want nothing to do with anyone else, we don't need anything. You know, it's ironic is that a lot of these people who are waving the Eritrean flag next to the Ethiopian flag at these pro-genocide rallies, I'm not going to call them protests, are people who, when the peace deal was supposed to happen and Abiy Ahmed asked Isaias Afwerki around our Independence Day for peace and for talks, Isaias didn't respond for a month. And we on the opposition were like, you should talk to him. Why isn't he talking to him? And these pro-government people who are now dancing with these flags were saying, we want nothing to do with Ethiopia. They just need to get their troops out of our land. They just need to demarcate the border. We don't need anything from them. We never want to see their faces after what they've done to us. And then this man all of a sudden practically, you know, gets married to Abiy Ahmed on camera. And everyone all of a sudden is like, well, you know, we love Ethiopia. They're our best friends. Like, I think either way, the hate should have never been there. You should have had an issue for the empires. That's why this man being able to play with you this way is so sad, because you were in the wrong in the first place for hating a whole people. And then being so quick to love them because someone told you to. I think that's so scary. And so just seeing how this whole thing played out, watching it all happen, and then seeing now that, you know, during my advocacy, I don't like to call myself an activist. I don't think I've done enough to claim that title. But in my advocacy, I feel like things have never been worse than they are in this moment. And so when I tell you it's very disheartening knowing how many people like are now being, I don't think our soldiers are walking to Oromia. So now these young boys and young girls are getting dropped off in planes to go kill people who they likely didn't even know existed. They probably in Eritrea, you know, I don't think they're taught about the Ethiopian tribes or tribes that were, you know, annexed by Ethiopia or any of that. So for these people to go and kill people they had no hate for, it made a little more, it didn't make sense with Tigray, but you can understand with Tigray how this man made them think that their whole life being the way it is because of these specific people. Way on it. There's hate behind it. With Oromia, it's just that he's playing with us, and it's, I get very passionate, but yeah, that's pretty much, I can only imagine like how many women are losing their oldest sons who can't feed them now, and they already lost their husbands. Like, this is a very real thing. A lot of people, two parents are handicapped from the war, from 30 years ago, not 20 years ago, 30, they've been handicapped this whole time, and their little kids are out here selling gum to survive and selling cigarettes, and we're just giving up our few youth that are left. Like Fulda said, we have, or I would said 5,000 plus people were leaving Eritrea every month before the war. And most of those people are not old. They were able-bodied young people who are now being used for something that will not benefit us either way. So I'm really done this time. But yeah, it's affecting our people drastically. And because we don't have any inside scoop on what's happening, because we only have one press and one radio station and one media, we're only going to find out the outcome later. I think everyone else is, in a sense, lucky to know the damages as they happen. For us, it's going to be a huge, huge, like, dump of reality hitting us at once we're allowed in the country. I'm really scared for that.
So I think Salim nailed the question. One of the things that we have to understand here is the Eritrean population is very small. And for such small population to have fought 30 years and then another 2 years in 98,000, the first 30 years, 61 to 91 in Gregorian calendar, and then 98 to 2000, in total, there was almost 100,000 people died. Youth died. And if you think about it, every family member, every family in Eritrea have been impacted. And then after such disastrous war, especially the border war, the first war for independence, the Eritrean people have kind of accepted it. It was the price that they paid for independence. The border war was something that was very painful because the prime minister of Ethiopia and the president of Eritrea at some points in the last 20 years in their interviews said that that war was not necessary and it was not about border. If it was not necessary and if it was not about border, why did we lose almost 100,000 people, over 20,000 Eritreans and obviously some other Ethiopians as well, but in total, I think 70,000 to 100,000 people died. This is not adding the millions of people that got displaced, the millions of young people's opportunities that have been, dreams that have been shattered. So now when the Eritreans and the Ethiopians, especially when the president of ECS and Abiy Ahmed started talking about peace, maybe Eritreans have shown their support for peace in Asmara. And some Ethiopians may have misunderstood that. The Eritreans were expressing their desire to live in peace. The Eritreans were saying, finally, we can breathe. Finally, we can have peace. Finally, we can have our children. They can go to school. We can have a peaceful life. I think some Ethiopians, unfortunately, might have understood it. Oh, yeah, we've been separated for a long time. This is about time that we get back together to old Empire Ethiopia, the one that was under Haile Selassie, under Mengistu. Some Ethiopians even went ahead and put the Eritrean map and the Ethiopian map together, the old map, when Eritrea was colonized by Ethiopia. And they started talking, this is what peace got them. And Abiy openly was talking about when ECS and him merged or agreed or got added, they share ASEP. ASEP is an Eritrean sovereign land. Ethiopians can use it. We are neighbors, but they cannot own it. This was something that was heartbreaking for the Eritreans. The other thing that the Eritrean president at the time was, despite what I just mentioned, over 100,000 people dying for this, he said this was a waste of three generations, but we have not lost anything. We have gained so much. This was heartbreaking for Eritreans also. The families that have lost their loved ones have not gotten back their loved ones. And yet the president is saying that we have not lost anything. So now the current war, the war that has been fought in the last 9 months, no Eritrean wants to go to fight another war in a neighboring country, Ethiopia, or any other country for that matter. And especially this war was not for the benefit of the Eritreans. There was not any benefit for Eritreans to gain. If there was a problem with Ethiopia, and now, as Salim was mentioning, they are our best friends now, what was the problem then? Even Abiy, in this case, I think because we are in an Ethiopian media or Oromia media, this is something that needs to be highlighted. Even Abiy was not honest about the situation because every time he got asked about ASEP, he did not answer the question. Every time he did not acknowledge the Eritrean independence. He was deceiving his own people. He was misleading his own people. Ethiopia is starting to have a navy. Ethiopia does not have a sea. Why didn't they have a navy for the last 27, 30 years? And now all of a sudden there is a need for a navy. You cannot even hold the country together. So as far as the Eritreans are concerned, the Eritrean people, as I think any other people, but more than any other people because of the misery that we've had in wars, are a peace-loving people. They don't want to get involved into another war. But when it comes to their own sovereignty, their own independence, their own threat from external powers. Unfortunately, we have not been able to solve the internal issues. but they all unite to fight against it. So I think the fact that we had our own EOs cross the border to go to Ethiopia, we have already confirmed to Tigray, but we have not necessarily confirmed some of the things that have been said about more, our troops being in Oromia. We have not independently verified some of it, but it does not matter. If they cross the border, whether they are in Tigray or in Oromia or Amhara or other Kulilis in Ethiopia, I think that's not right. It was not the best interest of the Eritrean people. Fortunately, despite for the last 1 year, the government of Eritrea specifically saying Ethiopia was the main enemy, Ethiopia was the main enemy. And all our movies or our propaganda about it, how Ethiopia is a big enemy next door, how the atrocities that they have committed. But in the last 1 year, I mean, the last 2 years after the, two, 3 years after the peace deal, or the what they call as a peace deal, Ethiopia's problem have become Eritrean problem now. It just started saying, oh, we cannot have peace unless Ethiopia have peace. We cannot, Ethiopia's problem is our problem, is what he said on TV. So we've had our own problems that we've not addressed, and yet we have another big country that have so many issues, internal issues, and we are waiting. Our freedom cannot be achieved until that country's situation is sorted out. That's really a sad reality for our people. But I will tie this up to the other question that we had earlier. The fact that we have, as Awad and Salim mentioned, the fact that we have no independent media, because the independent media that started around 97, ran up to 2001, they were all imprisoned. Nobody knows where they are. They were shut down. The newspapers were shut down. Their editors and journalists were imprisoned with the top leaders of G15. And thousands of people got arrested after that. The people in Eritrea right now, in terms of information, there is no reliable data or reliable internet system that they can access. The only source of information right now is really the government's media. And what they report on the government's media, despite all the issues that we have in the country, despite our youths dying across the border in Ethiopia in a needless war that does not benefit Eritreans, they show news, they bring news about how there is fire in California, how there is a weather change in any other country or war in other countries. This is to specifically make the Eritrean people feel that even despite how bad it is there, it's worse somewhere else. They always bring news that is bad somewhere else. And the information blockade in the country has been so systematically done that the Eritreans inside the country, they don't have any alternative information source. And the Eritreans outside the country, despite having all the information sources, one of the things that I have not mentioned earlier is the fact that they lack, the fact that the government of Eritrea have managed to hold the country, repress the country without any laws, there is a fear that if this government is removed by any way, we could be another Libya, we could be another Syria. And the government wants the people to believe this. The government wants the people to live in fear. And some people, some agents, some of the government agents outside of the country also bring this forward. One thing that I can say that is also contributing is the Eritrean people have not been able to see a formidable opposition system that united itself to become an alternative to the government system, to the current government in Ethiopia. But to tie it back to the question, Eritreans have not benefited from the war. They will not benefit from this war. We will know now, maybe next year, how many Eritrean young Eritreans have died in the war in Ethiopia. We are hearing reports that they have left Ethiopia now, but we don't know for sure that if there are some in the Oromia Kulil or other regions of the Ethiopia. But the Eritrean people are impacted dearly by the war, because it's a very small population. Pretty much every family member is in the army, and therefore it impacts. I know some Ethiopians, they did not know there was a war in 98 and 2000. I heard some conversations. Some Ethiopians have no clue that there was a war because their family were not impacted. But in Eritrea, it's a small country, every family member would get impacted, and this is unfortunate. It's already a weak country. The government has systematically weakened it, and now this war added another layer to that destruction and weakness. And Eritrean people have to stand up and fight for that.
No, I think both of you, Salem and Fikre, said it very well. But if I could go ahead and add a few. I think what dictators do in general, for example, with our dictator in Eritrea, his script, his Hollywood script about him as an individual has been written very, very well. And I think that's a mistake. I think any of us who lead our country, our nation, our people, we shouldn't be worshiping the individual, what they say, what they do. But instead, we should maybe be worshiping them in the institutions that they build. That way, when he or she is not even around, the institution will continue with the process to benefit the people, so on and so forth. So what, like, you know, Dictator Isaias Afwerki has done, for example, in Eritrea is over the years, purposely to go ahead and keep the population of Eritrea hostage, he continued to create external enemies. For example, like I said, as small of a country as we are, with a small population of 3 million or so, we have fought with Djibouti, we have fought with Ethiopia, we have fought with Sudan, we have fought with Yemen. Now, are these decisions made by the Eritrean people? I beg to differ. This is purposely done by a dictator who's trying to occupy the minds of the internal population. So anybody anywhere in this world that's fighting for justice, so on and so forth, keep up the good fight, obviously. But like I was saying earlier, you got to be able to go ahead and actually go a notch farther. And what happens afterwards? What happens the if? So on and so forth. Secondly, what I was saying earlier, I think in 2018, when Abiy and Isaias obviously were all excited in merging, so on and so forth, I think many of us were excited, including myself. What I honestly thought at the time was, hey, you know what, Abiy Ahmed, what he's doing, what he's saying is much needed in our native country of Eritrea. I honestly thought he was going to go ahead and influence Isaias Afwerki. But unfortunately, Isaias Afwerki is the one who influenced Abiy Ahmed. And as a result of it, both countries are paying the price for it. It's unfortunate. So we got to keep these leaders in check. One of the first things that we did, obviously, in 2020, around November, when you know the drum of war was obviously starting, as justice seekers or Eritreans or Yaqlawans, we went ahead and actually spoke up. This war does not benefit the Eritrean people. Even right now, when the war is defined, I wish the name Eritrea wasn't even within or named, because Isaias Afwerki is a decision maker of the Eritrean people, unfortunately, right now, against their will. The Eritrean people did not choose to be in this war. They are forced to be in this war. We have reports that are coming to us from inside Eritrea right now. They are underage kids that are training in Sawa. Why? Who is accountable to this? Who do we hold accountable to this? We have a dictator in the country. Unfortunately, we have nowhere to go to. In terms of Tigray, like I said, from day one, we opposed it. In fact, if I could go ahead and clearly state it in plain words, it's none of our business. This is an Ethiopian internal crisis, and Ethiopian issues, Ethiopian crisis need to be solved by Ethiopians. Simple as that. And likewise, Eritrean issues need to be solved by Eritrean issues. Now, like Fikre was saying earlier, we couldn't independently verify it if there are Eritrean troops in Oromo, but by any form of measurement, this is completely wrong. As Eritreans, we oppose this. No Eritrean youth, no Eritrean life should be obviously sacrificing in Oromo. For what cause? We opposed it from day one, and to this day, we oppose it as well.
Well, yeah, that's a lot to consider about the impact that this has had on the people of Eritrea. And I found it very interesting what you said, Awet, about you know, I see us being consumed by this exercise of occupying people's minds. That every action that is being taken, or all this deployment of Eritrean troops, is simply in pursuit of this one individual's ambitions and his beliefs or his personal interests, essentially, and that an entire people of country are being sacrificed for that reason. Yeah, in regards to the lack of independent verification of Eritrean troops in Oromia, of course, there has been a lot less focus on the war in Oromia by media, particularly international media. So that type of independent verification hasn't been as easy to achieve, but there have of course been many accounts from citizens of Oromia of Eritrean troops being present. So based on these accounts by people in Oromia, by citizens of Oromia, there have been a presence of Eritrean troops in Oromia, although that doesn't seem to be the case at this point or any longer. So in regards to the Oromo people's struggle for liberation from the Ethiopian Empire, Jalmaro mentioned earlier that as Oromos, we, you know, consider the Eritrean people as a people who can more intimately relate to our struggle and more personally understand our struggle and all the nuances of trying to free yourself from a colonizer, particularly a local colonizer, so to speak, rather than a sort of removed colonizer or a particularly sort of detached or external colonizer when the colonization is a bit closer to home, so to speak. So what are the Eritrean people's general perspective on the Oromo struggle, if I can ask you to sort of speak on that in more general terms, you know, and from your individual perspectives. I suppose I can't ask you to speak on behalf of all Eritreans, but from your individual perspectives, what is the view on the Oromo struggle, taking into the account, for example, that the Oromo Liberation Front was for many years based in Eritrea, while it was considered a terrorist organization by the Ethiopian state. So how do you relate to the Oromo people's struggle for freedom? Do you view us as Ethiopians? Do you consider us to be just, you know, another entity within the Ethiopian state? Or do you make some sort of distinction? And yeah, how do you relate to the Oromo struggle for freedom?
So for me personally, I have so many Oromo friends and people that I consider family even. So all the ones I've known are people who consider themselves Oromo, and they make the distinction. So I do as well, because I'm familiar with them and their struggle, and we discuss it, and we have so many things in common. To me, it seems like the issue with your situation is that geographically, it's a little bit more inconvenient to be taken out than we were at the very top of Ethiopia, right? And so we were able to just kind of take ourselves off. I know I'm making it sound very simple, but just in terms of, I think we have very similar issues. It's just you guys are being inconvenienced by other things that we didn't necessarily have. So I know the distinction. However, in the last year, since I started sharing my views on Oromia and wanting to be an ally, last year I changed my profile picture to red during the Oromo protests. And when Haçalı was assassinated and everything, I was speaking about this, and I got a lot of backlash. And a lot of Oromo people, or people claiming to be Oromo, were messaging me claiming that they actually want to be part of Ethiopia. And so I learned there is a huge group of Oromo people who actually do claim Ethiopia, kind of like Abiy Ahmed, I guess. So I'm barely now understanding that it could actually offend people to make the distinction. But from my personal experience, I don't think this is every Eritrean's experience, but from mine, just knowing so many, I know like not to call all my Oromo friends Ethiopian, kind of like if they call me Ethiopian. So, and then, and sorry, in regard to the OLF being in Eritrea, I'm a huge, or at the time, so I was talking to my friend about this last week, and he was telling me about it, and I think that it's beautiful. I think our government may have had other reasons for wanting to help, but I think whatever it was, I think it's great, because when someone's considered a terrorist organization by the West, that doesn't necessarily mean that, because reading about our history, we were considered rebel fighters in the liberation against Ethiopia. So even when the whole West was hearing about Eritreans, we were guerrilla fighters, we were rebels, and we were Shifta, and like, you know, we were just not considered, you know, we weren't considered fighting for the right thing. They thought we were just being menaces to society in a sense. So I never really like when we listen to what the West has to say about who a terrorist organization is. So I fully support whatever Oromo people decide to do. I think that if all Oromo people can come to a consensus and decide if they want to be part of Ethiopia or not, that should be on the Oromo people. But I'm willing to call whoever wants to be called what. And from what I've experienced, most Oromo people I know want me to make the distinction. So
I'll just go ahead and add something to Salim's points. She nailed it as well again. I think it goes back to the basics. It's a matter of self-determination. The Eritrean struggle, after the European colonization, if we go back in history, the African borders are colonization borders, and the international agreement has been made, or international law agreed to keep the colonial borders as is, to for stability reasons. The Eritrean struggle, when we got when the British came to Eritrea after the Italians during the Second World War, it got questioned. While all other African countries were getting independence, the Eritrean question was not being answered. The Eritreans were not asked what they want to do. The Ethiopians claimed Eritrea. Some powers, including the United States and England, wanted for safety of that region because of the Cold War that was starting post-Second World War, and Israel being established as a country at that time in 1947-48. All that contributed for powers of the world to intervene in that region and to make sure that there is a friendly environment for Israel, there is a friendly environment for themselves because of the Cold War, Russia, the East and West blocs, if I may say that. So the Eritreans were not asked what they want. So that means they did not self-determine what they want to do, whether they want independence or they want to be part of Ethiopia, or even some other commentators at that point mentioned that it should be divided into two parts. Part of it be given to Sudan, part of it be given to Ethiopia. So where I'm going with this is the main concept that of self-determination is what took us, because we were not able to self-determine our destiny, was what took us to raise arms and fight for our own independence. And that costed us a lot, and that took us 30 years. Eritrea used to be, because of the Italian infrastructure by the Italians, it used to be one of the developed countries in Africa at that time. And because of what followed since, and the war and things that happened after that, especially the 30-year war, now it's probably one of the worst countries in the world. And the 30 years post-independence also hugely contributed to that as well. So going back to the Oromo people, if the Eritreans fought for their own self-determination, for their own independence, and I think during the struggle, when Eritrea was struggling to get its own independence from Ethiopia, some Oromo movements also did the same. The Tigray, TPLF, basically means the same thing. And the peoples of other nations or other ethnic groups or other regions in Ethiopia also raised the same self-determination issue. I believe the Eritreans had managed to to have international law that supports them. One of them is the colonial border that we have between Eritrea and Ethiopia. One of the challenges that's gonna that I see within Ethiopia for liberation or independence is, what are the bases for that independence? What are the maps that you want to draw? Which part of the country is Oromia? Which part of the country is Tigray? Bringing up examples here. But in principle, the peoples of any nation, any population should have the opportunity to self-determine. And the Eritrean people, as you mentioned earlier, I cannot talk for the Eritrean people necessarily, but I know that the Eritreans have fought so hard to make the self-determination thing happen, and it costs them so much. And we would not want to see such cost, other people to pay such cost. If there is a self-determination issue raised, and if the people of those of a certain group have a basis for independence or for liberation, I think the peace-loving Eritreans would support a self-determination. And I think Salim nailed it also when Elias was in Asmara. I don't think he has had the best interest of the Oromos when they hosted Olef in Asmara. I think Isaias does not care about the Ethiopian people, whether they are Oromia, Tigray, Amhara, or any other people. He does not even care about the Eritrean people. There is one thing that he cares about, and that's staying in power. And because he has been in power for so long in Eritrea, if he can get access to have influence in Ethiopia, I think that's what he's trying to do right now as well. So he's a power-hungry individual that have put his people in slavery. And to think that Isaias cares about the Oromo, that's why he kept the Oromo Liberation Front there, I would not agree with that. But the fact that they were there, I think the Eritrean people in general would support a self-determination by any people. But again, I am not here to speak for Eritrean people. It's an opinion, but we've gone through a lot, and we don't want other people to go through a lot as well. If independence and liberation is what the people want to decide, as Salim said, we'll support what the people want to do. And obviously, the people of that of the Oromia Kabila at this point, or Oromo, whoever wants to be independent, given a certain map or given a certain definition, given certain basis for claim for independence, I think they have. I'm not knowledgeable about what part of Oromo is going to be independent or what are the basis for it. I have a lot of shortage of information on that. But what I can tell you is, if the people of that region or the people of that ethnic group want to be independent, they have all the pros and cons of independence as part of Ethiopia or independence. They care more about their own people than the Eritreans would care about the Oromo people. But the Eritreans would show solidarity with anybody that wants to self-determine.
Good deal. I think Dictator Isaias Afwerki, giving him a little more credit than he deserves. I mean, never mind about Ethiopia, about Oromia, about Eritrean people. Honestly, don't think he even cares about his family members, for the simple reason that he's a father, he's a grandfather. Why in the world would you not think about the future of your kids and your grandkids? Because of the harm and the destruction that he has caused upon the Eritrean people, his kids and his grandkids are going to be held accountable. So I think he's an audience of one. All he cares is, like you said, about his power, unfortunately. In terms of the Oromia, I think Salim and Ferre, you two nailed it down for the sake of time. My view is likewise, but I think it's what Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So if we have injustice in Eritrea, and if we have injustice in the Oromia, if we have injustice in Latin America, so on and so forth, as justice-seeker Eritreans, we support it.
Thank you all for those insights and for your allyship. We appreciate that. So looking ahead, what exactly would you say are the obstacles for the Eritrean people to achieving freedom right now? And what needs to happen for the opposition to make headway? And then, you know, what do you expect to happen when there is a power vacuum if Isaias is not there?
I think right now is kind of a very pivotal time. It's, you know, when there was the actual fight for independence, the 30-year armed struggle, they were fighting for independence. And then once we got it, they kind of just let the people who were running the war run the country. And I think that was the worst thing that could possibly happen. People with PTSD who were assassinating people and killing people for a living, you know, not even, and I'm not talking about just average soldiers. I mean, the generals, the heads, the ones who were running the whole operation have now run our country with all of their issues. And so what I think is very important right now is to make sure that everyone is clear about their intentions, because right now is the time where I kind of see it like we're nation building all over again. We're kind of from outside. We have no other choice. I mean, we don't know if it'll work, but it's our only option. We can't let our people just keep dying like this. So right now it just seems like the obstacle is knowing what people's intentions are. We're starting to see the division. We're starting to see so many different reasons for why people choose the stances that they're taking. And it's a very scary time because, you know, it's a time, and that's what I want you guys to know in your struggle, is that there's kind of a high where it's like, let's just fight for the independence. We all have one goal. Let's just keep going. And you kind of are considered annoying for wanting to talk about the outcome later. Like Awit was saying, it's very important to talk about the next step, and people will be like, why are you worried about that? We don't even have anything. Don't worry about the eggs before you even have your chicken, or some, you know, like people are just constantly telling you not to talk about the next step. And that is so dangerous, because that's how we ended up in this situation right now. I think it's very important to know who you're talking to, what their ultimate goal is, who are they looking to actually protect, and what is there? I don't know. It's just so many people with ulterior motives. And that's what's scary. Is I'm sure the same thing happened in Eritrea. Everyone was probably fighting, and we just don't have all the information. But there was constantly, you know, people wanting to go into this for power. We're having the same issue right now. And so I think that is like weeding those people out, not giving them any power to influence masses. Because once you get people who have followers in our community, it's very hard to stop them. We don't have as many leaders anymore, and that's due to ECS. So people want someone to follow. So when you see someone who has different motives, because it could very well be that we're allowed into our country next year. It's what I'm praying for every day. You know, I don't know. It could be a year, it could be 10 years, but you know, let's say that we're back in our country next year, and the people who are now, we're all working from outside to make this happen. We're now in these offices, in these administrative positions, in these positions of power in our country. Or I mean, no, we want our people to be able to vote for themselves, but just in general, we're going to be the ones orchestrating it, right? And we want to make sure we're taking the right people in, because our people deserve freedom. They can't handle anymore. It's too much. Like, I just don't want to add to any more suffering. So that's been one thing, just trying to figure out who to align myself with and making sure that all of us have the right intentions. And because you get questioned a lot, which obviously, as people should, it's a very pivotal time, like I said, because I feel like the first nation building experiment went wrong, and this is our next chance. But with the power vacuum, if everything goes right and we're all able to unite, ideally we'll have a diplomatic system where we're able to put in a government from exile into the country. You know, there's so many things. I don't know how that whole thing would work, but ideally we would have people that can go in and govern if anything was to go wrong. But do I think that would be an easy transition? No, I don't. I'm sorry I even spoke on this, because I like to stick to my lane. It's humanitarian stuff. I don't know what the strategies will be. I honestly am very scared, and I'm very scared. But in my head, if all things could go well, we'll be able to unite so that there's trust, and then the people inside the country will be able to trust who we want to lead for a very short time until they can vote. And most importantly, a constitution needs to be put in place before everything else. So for you guys, the one thing I'd recommend is anything that you think could be handled later that are small details, they are not small details. Focus on them right now because they are going to arise, and later people will be like, I didn't know you felt that way, or you're going to feel like, well, I didn't know you felt that way. And it's things that you need to figure out during the struggle. So I hope that made sense, but that's been my observation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Power vacuum is what the government specifically says wants to have us fear. And as I mentioned earlier, despite of Eritrea having independence for 30 years, we have not been able to build any institution, any democratic institution that would help us in the transition from the current system to the more democratic and peaceful governance. So the fact that we don't have any constitution, we don't even have, the way the government is structured right now, there is a president and there is people that he tells whatever he wants to do. And that's it. That's how the government is being led. There is no institution, there is no vice president, there is no transition plan, there is no transition document, there is no constitution. We say this several times. There is no institution, there is no parliament, there is no cabinet, functioning cabinet of ministers. There is cabinet ministers, there are ministers that have been there for as long as the actual leader have been. They are yes men leaders. I don't even know if I can call them leaders. They are managers of his affairs in these ministerial positions. And they don't have any questioning authority to the leader. They have not met recently, I think for a few years, and nobody said anything. The bylaws I mentioned earlier have not met for 20 years, and nobody said anything. Oh, well, when when I say nobody from the government. So power vacuum is what a lot of people are fearing, either people in the government supporting the government, or people in the opposition also are fearing this power vacuum. And this is systematic. It did not happen overnight. It was not an accident. This is something that he has systematically worked to create that fear among the Eritreans, so that because there is a vacuum that may be created, so that people would think, okay, well, then we should keep him there, or we should not question his authority, is what he's done. But in terms of obstacles for freedom right now, the main obstacle that we face as Eritreans is the fact that we have, unfortunately, have a divided ideas. It's a very small country. We have a number of political parties that is in proportion to our population, unnecessarily huge number of political parties. There is over 30 or 40 political parties or entities that are trying to actually bring change in Eritrea. If you really look into their documents, maybe, or talk to the people that are in these organizations, there is not much difference, but there is personality difference. We have created a political system or political opposition system that have not been able to create a formidable alternative to the Eritrean government, a one alternative to the Eritrean government. And that's where YACL comes in. YACL, in the last 2-3 years, have pretty much been acting almost like government in helping refugees, in making diplomatic connections with the United States, with the EU, African Union, and other global stakeholders in the global safety and security. Especially when it comes to our refugees, the government have been denying that Eritrea has refugees. It's actually ironic now. Recently, we've seen Eritreans come out in support of refugees, but they do not have any sign that talks about refugees, but they are hate to the Tigrayan leadership. So in terms of obstacles, one of the main obstacles, as I said, is our lack of unity, the lack of prioritizing our objectives, entities not having a prioritized objective. And in some cases, there is a mistrust that the government created over 4 years. The government infiltrates in political organizations. It's not necessarily fair to we have to also take ownership that there has been a lack of creating a united force to oppose him. We cannot, despite the government's efforts to shut down or to destroy any organization that questions its authority, I think we also have to take responsibility. We have not been able to create that formidable force. Now, YACL organizing the United States, a grassroots movement, bottoms up, and creating that connections with others, the political parties and organizations at a global level, 10 countries organizing themselves, create a parliament or an assembly of global representation for Eritrea, diplomatically connecting Eritrea back to the world. Ethiopia has been, I mean, Eritrea has been isolated from the world because of the government or the current region. So having that, this kind of platforms already established now, and working with the forces inside the country, one thing that we believe for certain is that we cannot create a government in exile and impose it upon the Eritrean people. We have to be able to work with the people that are inside the country. And we know that there are a lot of Slavic, justice loving Eritreans, including in the apparatus of the government, but they have not been able to shine yet because the current system, the way it's set up, does not allow any dissent like that. But the underground, they're working underground. We have connections with some of them. We have connections with fighters in Sudan, in Ethiopia, specifically in Tigray, creating this global Eritrean, including inside the country, power to replace the Eritrean government is in place to avoid that vacuum. So we have Eritrean professionals and intellectuals organizing themselves in about 10 or something departments. These are going to be experts. Unfortunately, educated Eritreans have left the country in the last 20, 30 years. We have one university and now several colleges, but the graduates from all that university and the colleges are, most of them are outside of the country. So organizing these educated Eritreans, making sure that they contribute to the transition period. And the Yaku movement is trying to create a unified, not necessarily the Yaku organization, but also other political organizations, a unified front to replace the Eritrean government that works with inside of the government entities or individuals. So the fact that we have intellectuals working to draft policies, transition policies, Yaku have already put a three-step to the struggle. Yaku struggle is not necessarily to remove the Eritrean government. Then what? We have three steps. One is, the first step is to remove the Eritrean government. And the second step is to manage the transition alongside all the stakeholders of the country. And then the third step is the democratization and building of institutions. So we are working with all the Eritrean stakeholders outside and inside to create a formidable national force to avoid any power vacuum post-ECS era, and to even draft some policies for transition, some policies for even post-transition things. Educated Eritreans and intellectuals and organizations are working hand in hand. If you ask me, are we working to the urgency? Are we prioritizing as much as we should? I'm afraid there is a little lack of it, but we are still continuously working, and we are showing hope now that, especially with Global Yaku forming, and then working with other stakeholders in terms of in engagement terms, there is documents drafted, there is roadmaps drafted, there is transition things that has been drafted to avoid this power vacuum. So if anybody is supporting the government because we are afraid of power vacuum, that vacuum is not going to get smaller if we don't work towards a unified idea, a unified front, a unified way of organizing ourselves so that we can avoid. And as I said earlier, if they are Eritreans and they want the best thing for Eritrean people and the Eritrean sovereign Eritrea, it doesn't matter whether they're supporting the government right now or in opposition. They have a stake in the system. They have a stake in the future of Eritrea. And we want to make sure that everyone is engaged so that we don't want to create a problem even for CCS. We want to make sure that everybody's voice is heard, whether it's ethnic groups, religious groups, or any groupings. Because at the core value of the Yaku movement is every individual person's freedom and rights have to be preserved, have to be cared for. And therefore, if every individual's right is cared for, the group's individuals also could be cared for through that. And make sure that every trans voice is heard. It doesn't matter at what side of the spectrum you're in right now. And this is going to be, this is going to take a lot of egos to be down. So there are some people, as in any other society, as people that have egos, people that have that are comfortable with smaller organizations, but then for the benefit of the Eritrean people, for the benefit of the future of Eritrea, for the peaceful, democratic, prosperous country that we want to build, there are some egos that need to be removed from some of our individuals. And I'm very hopeful, by the way, despite all the negative things that's happening about in Eritrea, the Eritrean news, the Eritrean people, the Eritrean mothers, I'm very hopeful that the Eritreans are capable of organizing themselves, lift up from the misery that we are in right now, and make sure that we get the freedom and peace and the democracy that we want to see. And we're going to be, it starts in within our individual actions, and every individual Eritrean is called upon. And this part should be part of the process for change. Nobody should be alienated from the process for change in the transition. And therefore, that vacuum could be created. I mean, that vacuum could be closed if we work together and create that national front to replace the government. And I want to stress this one. The people that are inside the country are the main stakeholders of this movement. We're not imposing any government or any rule from outside in. This is a collaborative effort, and the inside are the main stakeholders. They are going to be the main players. Some of the leaders in the government, some even the Eritrean people have no benefit in having revenge against some individuals that have been doing some atrocities by the government's order. The Eritrean people can forgive some of the leaders that have been unfortunately following the Isaias leadership in Isaias' orders to commit atrocities if they cooperate in the transition process right now. Because we don't, there is nothing that we can benefit from revenge from. If other countries like South Africa could manage to get a unified country after apartheid, after race-based apartheid legal system that was abusive, Eritreans have the same problem. Nobody is benefiting from the system, and therefore it should be easier for us to reconcile without having any appetite for revenge, for destruction, for continuous war. And this is something that we can work together and achieve. And I'm very hopeful about that. As you can see, I'm passionate about the future of Eritrea. It's really hopeful and bright. It's not as what we've been describing it has been in the past. And change, by the way, is inevitable. How we manage that change and how fast we can do it, how at what cost, is the only thing that we can manage and make sure that it's minimal cost as the shortest possible time, and in a unified way that can sustain the country. And hopefully the country that we hope to create is not necessarily inside looking, but also region looking. We want to live in a very peaceful neighborhood. If there is no peace in Ethiopia, in Sudan, other parts of that region, it also would affect us. And therefore, we'll work with all peace-loving people in that region. As I said earlier, any population in that region or any part of the world, but specifically in that region, has been in war for over 100 years. And unfortunately, this needs to change. And the citizens of those countries in this region or the people in that region have responsibility to do it. We're ready as a real trying to work for a sustainable, peaceful region that is prosperous.
I think like Fagre and Salam stated, change is coming. And it seems like it's coming soon, the way things are changing on a daily basis. But I think the challenge for us Eritrean is unfortunately because of the dictatorship, by design, by purpose, institutions have been broken, so they don't work based on process. An example, what Brother Fagre was saying earlier with the university, we do not have a single credential university in Eritrea. Why? Because talented or educated people are a threat to the dictatorship. So he purposely, obviously, closed the university, unfortunately. Secondly, I consider Salem and Fagre to be Eritrean talents. And unfortunately, these individuals are not in Eritrea serving their people, because the government or the institution that the dictatorship put together is not meant for talented citizens to be in their country and benefit the country. What did he do? Purposely, the educated one, the doctor ones, the lawyer ones, the educated one, every talent that you could think of in every category has purposely got him to run out of the country. So at the end of the day, obviously, it's serving his purpose, but also the Eritrean people, just the basic people, are hurting, and unfortunately. I think what we need in general is unity. It really is. I think whether you are on the pro-government or on the justice seeker, so on and so forth, in our mind, I think we have an interest of our people, the interest of our country. Now, how we go about is where the difference is. I think we justice seekers, obviously, we see the injustice that's being caused in our people. And unfortunately, the pro-government supporters, the PFDJ, so on and so forth, all they see is their individual benefits. And it's unfortunate. And like Fikra was saying earlier, one of the challenges we in the Yaakko movement that we can, that's an area of opportunity. I don't want to say weakness. An area of opportunity is even the work that we are doing, we're just not doing a good job of getting it out to our people, to our members, as well as to the international community. I'll give you an example of this. We literally are acting like a government and we're not a government. For example, unfortunately, we cannot go to Eritrea or send stuff to Eritrea and help our citizens inside Eritrea. So the only option that we have as citizens of justice seekers is to help Eritrean refugees that are outside of Eritrea, whether it's in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, Tigray, so on and so forth, or Afar region, or in Sudan, or in Libya, or Egypt. We literally raised over $810,000 from Eritreans to help these Eritrean refugees, one. Secondly, by means of partnering with the nonprofit organization, we managed to get a donation of about $60,000 worth of PPE, personal protection equipment, you know, anything that's related to COVID-19, from gloves to masks and what have you. Now, we got that, and then we managed to go ahead and fly to Ethiopia and fly to Sudan and benefit the Eritrean refugees. In addition to that, we managed to build a relationship with a nonprofit organization and got $250,000 in cash donation. And by doing that, we managed to go ahead and actually open a clinic at a refugee camp that is actually helping Ethiopians and Eritreans at the Sudan border. And we managed to go ahead and open up a clinic and hire a doctor and hire three nurses. And as a result of it, we are seeing about 100 patients a day. So now we're doing all this work, but at the same token, like I said, we're just not doing a good job of getting it out. And you as Oromian, obviously, justice seekers, as you continue to fight the fight, just make sure the good work that you are doing, you manage to go ahead and get it out to your people and obviously to the world community. But then again, at the end of the day, I think what you guys are doing is the right thing to do, to continue to fight for your people. And that's what we're doing in the Eritrean community. And there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. And it seems like it's going to come sooner than we expected. So hallelujah to all.
Yes, definitely. This has been very, very insightful. And I'm glad that we're ending on a, you know, positive or at least hopeful note, because ultimately I think the reason why all of us are here is because we do believe that there can be a positive change and that the lives and trajectories of our peoples and our nations can change for the better and for the long term. Mm-hmm. And so I truly hope to see a truly free Eritrea as well as a free Oromia, and I think that we will see that hopefully sooner rather than later. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Would you like to, before we wrap up, just give our listeners or our viewers this time as well your social media handles or website so that they can find you and learn more about the work that you're doing?
I post on Instagram. It's Salem Haile, just like it's spelled here, but all one word, S-A-L-E-M-H-A-I-L-E. YouTube and Twitter are Salem Sutra, so S-A-L-E-M-S-U-T-R-A. And for email, I love emails even more, salem_haile@yahoo.com. And I think that's it. I also have Facebook, which is Salem Haile. So if anyone has any questions or, you know, if anything I said was insightful or triggering, feel free to contact me. I'd love to. I'm pretty sure I'll get some backlash for something, so we'll see. But thank you guys
that's,
for having
that's
me.
That's how you I know really you're doing something right.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you guys.
Absolutely. And I think if you're not getting all the name calling and what have you, you're not doing it right. So Salem Hafta, you're doing great. Keep up the good work. But in terms of Vital Yakel ESA, obviously you could visit us at our website for any information with regard to our Vital or our institution. It is www.vitalyakel.org. And why I have your attention, obviously we have 7 departments within our Vital Yakel ESA. And we could definitely use Eritrean talents. So if there are any Eritreans out there, obviously, that want to join us, and then, of course, expedite our struggle, come and serve with us. We'd love to go ahead and utilize your talent. And to you ladies, thank you so much for your time. I definitely had a great time. Thank you all so much.
I think I'll tell it all for Yakel. So we have a Facebook, by Yakel USA. We have a website, and we have a YouTube channel as well. We have live shows at least once a week. Now that we have the global Yakel coming, we have this global Yakel as well as an institution. It will be formed next week. We have our founding congress in next weekend. Thank you so much for having us. This has been a very insightful discussion, and hopefully we'll continue to connect the struggles, connect and share experience and learn from each other. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you all so
thank
much.
You.
Yes. And thank you to our listeners and viewers for tuning in. This really has been such an insightful discussion. And the last time we spoke to all of you as well, we learned a lot, and hopefully that will continue. Everyone, you've been listening to or watching the Free Oromia podcast, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. The Free Oromia podcast is available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. You can also listen to all of our episodes and view show notes at freeoromia.org/podcast. We have new episodes coming out every other week on Thursdays. And yeah, we hope that you enjoyed our discussion today, and we want to hear from you. You can give us a call on the Free Oromia podcast hotline and leave us a message or send us a text telling us what you think about our conversation today. That number is +1 430-755-0727. You can also reach us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at Team Free Oromia. And that's about it. Thank you all again so much for joining us. And we look forward to future discussions, both on the air and off the air, as well as further collaboration.
Yes, definitely. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Mi makaxe na ya tchese se fundo fabonto na kama tchese hal kanu galgala na jala tchese tanjolo masan na tabachese oromia.